The question that's been asked here, how do you answer the question? I'm thinking about, you know, as economics is coming from universities with millions of profit competition, myriads of firms with no names in the hand that just fight a battle with other names firms, so-called profit competition. And the book that probably most perfectly encapsulates for a modern audience this vision of the nature of a global business driven by millions of small profit competitive firms is, of course, the book by the American journalist who has a genius for great titles, but the great titles often are not matched by books that are equally interesting in terms of their content. It's the book for the title The World Itself, as I popularly can tell it. And so the predominant view amongst Western mainstream economists which has been taught in universities for at least 100 years is that the core of competition is small firms fighting each other, and mergers and acquisitions are mostly about the time, they're mostly trial. When firms become large, they won't stay large for very long. They're managing a disciplined industry, it's hard to manage a big firm, and they'll soon collapse. And that vision was beautifully expressed by the Cambridge economist Alfred Marshall when he likened competition to the trees in the forest. In other words, the forest canopies are always of the same height, trees rise, they get old and die off, and they're not replaced by other trees, just are replaced by others, and the continuous churn is the pattern. And that's the way most economists, it is much easier to construct economic models based on that. And it makes you feel comfortable because it's very small business and people like small business. But the reality, of course, if there's another way of looking at the world, and that way would be like, as discussed by Karl Marx, and that was the world where the basic law of economic operation is the real central regulation of capital. But one of the reasons it's not popular in Western academic institutions is, of course, that the prominence of monetary people in the world is quite important in the ideology of communism. So it's not a good idea to teach Karl Marx, just means you're teaching students to be communists. Well, that's a very interesting question. But you as a social scientist, you should look seriously at the logic behind the way that you are criticizing. And actually, Karl Marx's insight was quite brilliant, especially as it was contrived. Just in the 1840s and 50s, before some of these modern commentaries have become apparent. But there are other economists, people like Edward Chandler, at the Harvard Business School, my own teacher in Cambridge, which has said the world is really rather different. And we now have a chance to test the two different views of looking at the world. We've had 30 years of liberalisation, Washington consensus. What's the enjoy? Is it the gentleman with the long beard? Is it Karl Marx? Or is it a nice kind of professor who could be suit out of Russia in the number three? And the answer is it's just transparently obvious that Marx is right. And nobody wants to talk about it. Like, people want to talk endlessly about pointless models and games, but they're not looking at what's behind them. They're endlessly studying some little tiny mouse or behind them with a gigantic elephant, and they don't want to look at it. But now it is obvious. Every sector you touch has seen a process of intense industrial consolidation. The market has got bigger, the market has grown at very, very high speed, 10, 20, 30 times bigger than the 1960s or 70s, and the number of key firms has got smaller and smaller and smaller. As the Chinese say, Shushu, Kyushu, seek the truth from the point. When I was a child, we had, I think, 15 companies in the world, including three Russian companies, three in this country, a German company, two French companies. Three American companies that have made large commercial aircraft by the standards of the time. The market has grown immeasurably since then. What do we get? Two companies, Boeing and Airbus. In the automobile industry, there are many tens of firms in the automobile industry today. We have six giant companies that dominate the whole world of automobiles, the same in trucks. Then you can say, well, this is very strange because this is perfect market. So I say to people, let's take something low technology, a nice, easy low technology called this auditing. Anybody can look at accounts. I've got a very small accountant who does my work. But if you look at the commanding height of auditing the giant global corporations is where most of the money lies, it is four firms. There used to be five, now there are four. There were eight, there became five, now there are four. So basically, that's Karl Marx. That's the basic law of capital. And then if you think about physical production, something nice and simple, like a soft drink or beer, anybody can make beer, anybody can make a soft drink. What we've got today, we have two super giant soft drinks firms that control the commanding heights of the global soft drinks industry, and now basically two beer companies, four if you include the two slightly less reliable companies, but the top two are dominant in this industry, and the simple industry is beer. So obviously Marx is right, and the story is even more dramatic, because if you look down powerful iceberg of industrial competition underneath the surface, unstudied, by the way, by almost anybody. I've classified this ever since, you know, 20, 30 years ago. And most people, even in the industry, don't really know what's going on. So if you take something like, let's take the software industry, the big industry, you've got four giant beer companies, two super giant software companies. But if you take a simple thing, as let's take two SSL, metal cans and industrial glasses. Well, metal cans, when I started studying this 20 years ago, there were tens of metal can companies, today there are just three. And one of these, Rexam, which nobody has ever heard of, but it's a UK-based company, and Rexam was one of these three companies built through a sequence of highly successful companies and acquisitions. Rexam has plants across the world. It produces annually about 60 billion beverage cans. I think it's enough for 10 for the first on the planet. And it sells a modest number, 25 billion, to the company with the red stripe, otherwise known as Coca-Cola Company. So this is incredible industrial concentration. I call it cascade effect, a special position behind the supply chain. Another very simple business is industrial glasses. And very easy, it's very straightforward. The industry is now consolidated to the point where there's two companies, one German and one American tank startup, and Frank LDP. And between them, they have plants across the world, and they produce about 80% of the total supply of industrial gases in the world. China, India, Brazil, Britain, France, Germany, across the whole world. They have, of course, small plants, just as there are small plants making metal cans. But they're small plants, and they're part of the economic system. And a lot of people say, oh, these big firms, they are some big firms, they have lots of little clusters of small firms around them. Wakey, wakey, as the big cotton banker used to say, go and look what's on the label. These are giant firms and plants across the world. That's the nature of the modern business system, whether it's the soft drinks industry, the automobile industry, or the aircraft industry, any industry you care to know. I cannot think of one to which this trend was modified. That was not inconsistent with billions of people working in small firms, the world of perfect competition, the world of outward nature. And these are the poor people of the world, the bottom 60 to 70% of the world, the bottom 4 or 5 billion people. They definitely can't afford to drink Coca-Cola. They will never go in a Boeing plane. They will never buy a GM car. And they work in nameless, small, unprotected work with health trade unions with very high rates of damage to their very high rates of mortality of harms themselves. There are probably, in the global mining companies, there are just four big giant mining companies in the world. They probably between them employ no more than 400,000 people. The latest development, Rio Tinto in Australia, has giant, completely automatic trucks to move its product and automatic trains to take it from where the trucks bring them to the trip, completely 100% automatic. The numbers employed are falling and falling. Their share of world production and trade is rising and rising. In the mining industry around the world, there are probably 30 million people who work in abominable conditions with picks and shovels, with incredible danger to their health and their family. There is a world of global competition, the world of global competition for poor people. The world of globalization is highly concentrated.